Let's turn now to money. We got a couple of press releases recently, and one of them has to do with an education program with respect to the fire department and youth and old people.
Yeah. So this is, I don't know, probably our, I've been here, what, 10 years, and we kicked this back into full gear within the first year or so that I was here. So this is probably about our ninth year or so, maybe eighth year, because there was kind of a ramp back up and get in the good graces, if you will, of the Department of Fire Services that provides the funding for the SAFE and the Senior SAFE grants. So, you know, this is student awareness, fire education programs is what the SAFE stands for. The Senior SAFE applies that same principles to seniors, and these are the age groups that suffer the most from fires, right? Either they don't understand fires or they're curious about fires and they may set fires, right? We're trying to stop fire setting. Or as you age, obviously the impact of a fire in your life on your respiratory system, your skin and tissues that don't take a burn injury insult as well, right? As we age and our skin starts to naturally thin, you get a deeper burn, a more difficult burn for your body to manage and recover from as you age. So, you know, babies, infants, and elderly suffer the most from a burn injury. The kids that we target in the schools can sometimes light these fires in the homes, right? And so we're trying to eliminate the cause of some fires, the impact on the populations that are most devastated by a fire injury. And so the education is an awesome thing. I think when you get out there and you kind of enlighten people as to the risks come with that and how to manage it better. You know, how do you, if you start to have a small fire on the stove, how do you handle that? You know, most of our seniors probably already know this, but not all of them do. Putting a lid on a pot of oil that's burning, if you can do so safely, snuffs out the fire and it doesn't lead to the cabinets, that leads to the rest of the room, and now your whole kitchen, maybe your home is destroyed, but you had an increasing risk for smoke inhalation and heat damage to your skin and burns and so forth. So the programs are awesome. One of our lieutenants, Lieutenant Mike Shulman, has been quarterbacking this for a number of years. He took it over from Captain Barbagallo, who initiated it after I got here, and we kicked the program back in gear, and Mike's taken it over and has done fabulous with it, even through COVID, right, when that going into schools was a no-no, right? The schools are trying to keep COVID out and educate our kids. This school district did a phenomenal job with that, getting kids back in the classrooms. A lot of schools did not, right? They did. They were successful in that, and I can't applaud them enough, because that's a good thing, right? Kids at home struggling to learn at home in an environment that's not really designed necessarily for education, and no social interaction, that's just tough. It was tough on us. I can't imagine doing it as a kid. You need that. You need those friends and that exposure. Exactly. Even if you go to school and it wasn't a good day, you learn from that. You develop from that. And that's all important in life. So, you know, I think, you know, overall, there's been some awesome things. And that education piece, us back and forth with the schools and the senior center and the senior community, is a great outreach. And I think our statistics prove that it's successful, right? That we have a lack of a juvenile fire setting problem, and kids playing at home with fire, so to speak, creating fires, or having parents call us going, hey, my kid is getting into some stuff and I need help, right? We don't get that. We just don't get it. I don't get fire cause from kids or even seniors, really, that aren't for the typical obvious accidental things. There's not those purposeful or neglectful fires that are set because of a lack of education and training on the risks of those things. So, you know, while that's not absolutely positive fact, I think that the lack of those kind of incidents and fires speaks to the fact that it is successful. because otherwise, you know, you'd have the reverse, I think. You know, my history, and you look at the statistics in the fire service, communities that don't do these kind of things, they have a higher tempo of those problems. And that's why these problems exist. The government's not spending your tax dollars on things that they don't know work, right? We look at it, we study it, and if we go, wow, that, you know, that's not working, well, we have to stop spending tax dollars on it if it doesn't work, because we have an obligation to not be foolish, right? So this is a great program. One of the other grants that, as you were mentioning, we're getting additional monies from the same source, from the state government through Department of Fire Service, to replace a bunch of our aged nozzles, fire hose nozzles, on the trucks, and we're moving from kind of a newer, it's not really new, it's an old technology that's been around, but it was like the latest technology in what is called a fog nozzle or a combination nozzle, back to a smooth bore, which is basically an open hole. It's not brass fitting anymore because brass is too expensive and it's heavy, so it's lighter, stronger, cheaper metals, but it's a much more simple nozzle, and there's a lot of study and look at it that it's a more effective way to fight fire in many circumstances. Now, it's not the one-size-fits-all tool. The other nozzles will still exist, but we have quite a few that are really at end of life, need to be replaced. They're extremely expensive to go with that other style nozzle, whereas these are cheaper. So, you know, we're saving the taxpayers money on that end of it. We're moving back in a direction where it's a more reliable and scientifically kind of proven tool, right? Because these other nozzles were automatic gallonage, and without a lot of maintenance and a lot of expense, that automatic part doesn't always work so perfectly. And you may think you're getting adequate gallonage out of the nozzle, and it might produce a stream that looks great. But at the end of the day, you find out in some circumstances when you take it out and test it and do some maintenance on it that, wow, this thing is underperforming. And an underperforming nozzle is not putting enough water on the fire. And the only thing that puts the fire out is gallons per minute. And if you think you're getting, say, 100 gallons per minute and you're only getting 30, you've gone into that battle with only a third of what you need, and you're not going to win. Whereas these other nozzles, they're very simple. It's a certain size orifice. If you open up that bale all the way and the right pressure is being supplied by the pump, that's the amount of water that's going to come out of it. It's mathematically cannot be any other way. So while it's kind of a throwback and a simplistic, more simplistic tool, it's one of those things that, you know what? It works. Sometimes the old ways and the old methods based on, you know, those principles then that were sound are still sound today. And all the whiz-bangs that we create, sometimes they look great, they don't work so great, or they just don't last, right? And they take a lot more money to maintain. So we're kind of moving back in that direction, as a lot of departments do. New York Fire, you know, FDNY, they almost exclusively use smoothbore nozzles, and that is a huge department, and they have their own research and development. They're so large, and they didn't go to those nozzles without having the proof to support that decision. So, you know, learn from others that have the funding to do the training and the scientific evidence on it. So they've done a ton of things in the last 10 years in New York that have really helped support and change the way firefighting tactics are done. Still very similar, but there's some very detailed tactical things that we do differently now that we didn't do 20 years ago in my career, or even 10 years ago in my career, and it's making a difference in how safely and effectively we put out fires because of that effort to, no, we want to know scientifically and through study and research that what we're doing is effective, you know, both from the management side of it as well as the cost side of it, right? We have a responsibility to do both.
You know, I had a flight instructor one time who was a member of the National Transportation Safety Board, and at that time he said that in all the studies that he has been associated with the NTSB for years and years, he was in there for a long time, he said that after they found the cause of something and they implemented a rule or whatever it was, that particular incident never happened again in flight industry, in the airline industry. It never happened again once they found the cause of something. And it sounds, I mean, you can't do it, throw a blanket on everything, but it sounds similar to what you're talking about.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, scientific proof is the basis of good decision making, right? And sometimes science is off a little bit. If you're doing a study and you're doing it from a particular perspective, if you don't do it fully and completely, it may be wrong, right? Some people, you know, say, oh, we can make the numbers dance to say anything we want. So that kind of study in science is not good, but factual, clean, complete, and holistic study and research is awesome, and we've seen a lot of things moving in that direction that are good for the fire service, good for, you know, the protection of the community, in many cases better on our budget, because it's like, you know what, that really expensive nozzle has its place, but you don't need all of those on every line. You can actually use more effectively and what is a cheaper nozzle, and it's actually more reliable in many instances. So it's kind of the, it's crazy, you know, they say 200 years unimpeded by progress. That's not true. It's a mantra or motto that the fire service, you know, is kind of thrown out there, but I find it to be not accurate all the time. We have evolved time and time again with technologies.
Yeah, thank God.
Sometimes not good, and most times good and improvements. You know, we're hoping to see some changes in the industry that makes our fire gear, because right now the stuff that we're wearing has forever chemicals, you know, baked into it, and it's getting into my people, and it's not healthy for them. It's really unhealthy for them. And so we're seeing a huge push and shift in there, legislatively, manufacturing. So we'll see how that plays out. And, you know, we've done a ton in that for cancer prevention, and now we're finding out that maybe our gear is partly responsible for giving us some of these cancers. It's not just the smoke and the heat and the fires and so forth that we've been in, and that our pores are opened up because of the heat, and that the smoke is full of toxic gases. That is all true, but what we're finding is that some of the protective equipment that we wear to protect us from the heat, it doesn't protect you from the smoke. The SCBA does, keeps it out of your lungs, right? But it doesn't keep chemicals that can go through your tissue from getting in. So we've always had this exposure that we know, and a risk that we know, and we live with it as firefighters. But, you know, to find out now that there's chemical compounds in our turnout gear that could be very dangerous to us is a bit disheartening, but fortunately there's a lot of attention on it right now, and I would expect the way things move on this planet and technology wise that they will hopefully come up with a resolution, but they can't get it done fast enough for me and my people.